This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Knowledgeable.
Listen, here's what's wrong with your hypothesis, your theorem, your supposition, your postulate.
Honest.
If that front ain't in gangsta, your back end won't be able to show its full potential.
Understanding.
You're going to suck. You're going to suck for the next couple of years.
Passionate.
I'm all over social media. I live it.
This is the Kevin Sheehan Show on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Hashtag facts.
It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. Now, here's Kevin.
We didn't look like we had a ton of energy all night. You know, I think we wanted it. We just couldn't find it. And, when you can't find that rhythm, it makes it even harder. And so it's kind of chicken and the egg, you know, is the rhythm because you don't have the energy, or is it compounded, you know, because you don't have a rhythm? So it was just not our best game. We didn't play well. Lots of things we could have done better, improved on for next game. But, you know, that, like I said, it's now about how we respond.
Steve Nash last night, after maybe the most boring night of the NBA playoffs so far. One game last night, a game six, and really it never felt like it was in doubt. Then again, game five for much of the game didn't feel like it was in doubt either until Kevin Durant took over. You were waiting for him to do it. He tried to do it. But just didn't have enough in the tank last night. Good morning. If you missed Tommy Shepard on the show yesterday, he came on at the end of the show. We spent 20 minutes with him talking about Scott Brooks' departure and what was next. We're going to play that back for you at about 6:30. We'll also just talk about where the Wizards' job ranks among the several openings right now. I think the thing that we didn't do on the show yesterday that I had planned to do on this show, Brendan, but we just never got to it, was what Ron Rivera said to Ben Standig on Ben's podcast 2 days ago. Rivera did Ben's podcast, Standig Room Only. Ben does a really good job with his podcast. Ben does a good job on The Athletic and everywhere, including his appearances on this very program. And Ron Rivera basically dismissed Kyle Allen as even a participant in any of the quarterback battles, if there's actually a legitimate one for the top spot. And then whether or not there's a battle for the number two spot. For all intents and purposes, Kyle Allen looks like the odd man out. I thought it was pretty strange that Ron, who at the end of the year, unprompted, said about Alex Smith, yeah, well, Kyle Allen would have done the same thing in terms of some of those wins and gotten him into position to be in the postseason. There is a game right now that I think Ron Rivera is playing, and playing a game might be a little bit of an inflammatory way or an exaggerated way, a hyperbolic way of describing it, but I think I know what Ron Rivera is doing here with respect to the quarterback position, and I will get to that at 7 a.m. We're going to have a conversation. You're going to hear what Ron Rivera said with Ben on his podcast about Kyle Allen, or what he didn't say about Kyle Allen, what he said about Ryan Fitzpatrick and Taylor Heinicke, and then we will react to that. Before we get to what do you got, which includes something that Keith Hernandez said last night on his broadcast, of the Met game, right? He was doing the Mets game, Brendan?
Yeah.
By the way, the Mets in town. The Mets are in town today. The Mets didn't play last night. What was Keith Hernandez, calling last night? Was it from the other night?
Yeah, I don't actually know. It was in our daily rundown this morning.
Okay. Well, we're going to play something for you here shortly. I do want to talk quickly about the game last night. This was sort of the game I expected in game five, had James Harden not played. Now, Harden did play, even though he wasn't very productive in game five for Brooklyn. And Kevin Durant ended up having one of the greatest individual nights in the history of the NBA playoffs. We've said that a lot this postseason. And, you know, statistically and record-wise, it's true. By the way, there was another incredible night last night. Chris Middleton became the first guy to score 35-plus, have 5 steals, 5 assists, 10 rebounds in a game. He became just the 5th player in NBA playoff history to do that. So we did have something last night, Chris Middleton having a phenomenal game. But I sort of expected this game the other night. And you didn't get it the other night because, A, Durant went off and had an epic night. And B, Milwaukee really did play Brooklyn as if James Harden were James Harden. They didn't run a lot of double teams at Durant in Game 5. They didn't play him the same way they played Durant in Game 4 when Kyrie Irving left the game. And Durant was able to play more off the ball than he was with the ball, because Harden was in the game. Even though he wasn't very productive offensively, Harden handled the ball a significant amount of the time, which I thought made a big difference for Durant. Look, I said the other day, I ate crow on Durant. I have no problem eating crow, even though my point was that if Durant was out there by himself without Harden and Kyrie, it would have been hard for him to do what he did the other night. I still stand by that to a certain degree, despite the fact that Harden really wasn't James Harden. The point was, Milwaukee treated James Harden the other night like he was James Harden. Last night, they sort of did it the same way again. You know, there was some doubles of Durant more. There was less switching, so you didn't see, God forbid, Milwaukee make the same mistake again, although it wouldn't have shocked me. You didn't see Brooke Lopez matched up after a switch with Kevin Durant time and time again. You saw P.J. Tucker on him a lot. And Durant last night had to be, let's be fair to the man, he had to be a little bit out of gas after playing 48 minutes the other night, 48 hours after he physically got the crap beat out of him on Sunday when Kyrie Irving left the game. He played 40 minutes last night. He was 15 of 30 from the floor, so not nearly as efficient as he was the other night. He did score 32 points, have 11 rebounds, but he had 7 turnovers in the game. He had 7 turnovers in 40 minutes. And not that I am a big plus-minus guy at all. I do not adhere to it. I find it interesting typically to look at in games that are close throughout versus games that get out of hand late. Although he wasn't in there necessarily late, but he had the worst plus-minus of anybody on Brooklyn's team last night at minus 25. Meantime, flipping it around, I thought Giannis was exceptional. Thought it was one of his best games. I thought Brooklyn specifically in this game made it easy for him. Not so much with transition buckets, but there seemed to be more downhill opportunities that the Bucks had even in the half court. And the thing that Giannis didn't do is he did not settle. He didn't have 1 3-point attempt in the game last night, in part because he didn't have to. There didn't seem to be a wall of people waiting for him last night. So defensively was an off night for the Nets in this series. And because of it, Giannis got comfortable. Most of his buckets came in and around the basket. He was 12 of 24 from the floor. For the first time in the postseason, he did not attempt a 3-point shot in the game. And by the way, for the first time in this series, he shot You know, for him, well, from the free throw line, he was 6-for-10 from the free throw line, 60%, upping his overall percentage in the series from the free throw line to 40%. That's what he's shooting from the free throw line in the series, 40% from the free throw line. But I thought last night was Giannis's best game. It was a pressure game for him. Give him a lot of credit because he has not come through in these spots in the past. And last night, 30 points, 17 rebounds, didn't take a three, didn't settle, in part because I thought Brooklyn's defense wasn't good enough, and Giannis took advantage of that last night. Chris Middleton was outstanding, had one of his best shooting games of the postseason, and there it was, 104-89, a game, if you were watching it, never seemed in doubt, but with that said, because of what Durant did the other night, you were expecting Durant to at least give Brooklyn a chance, and for a moment he did, but then they ran out of gas. And, you know, Kevin Durant had no help last night. He got a lot of help in Game 5. The wild card aspect of Game 5 was Jeff Green. When Jeff Green made 7 of 8 from behind the arc and went for 27 points off the bench. Last night, just 2-for-9 overall, 1-for-4 from behind the arc, just 5 points from Jeff Green. And Joe Harris continues to struggle in this series as a shooter. Overall, the Nets and Kevin Durant got no help from anybody, even though Harden looked a little bit better, but not great. Not great. There were a couple of moments where you, in the past, would have seen Harden explode by somebody. He clearly can't do it. But Brooklyn shot 9 of 30. From the free throw line in the game last night versus the you know, making 13 making 16 threes in game 5. So that series goes to a 7th and deciding game. I mean, that's what you want to see. If you're a basketball fan, if you're a sports fan and not even a hardcore NBA fan, what you want to see in any of these best of 7 sports is you want to see the one-and-done environment that you get in college sports, that you get in the NCAA tournament. And you get a Game 7 tomorrow night in Brooklyn. By the way, Milwaukee is a 1-point favorite, Brendan, in Game 7. How about that? They open up as a 1-point favorite on the road in Game 7 against Brooklyn. And the obvious reason is Harden still isn't 100% clearly, and Kyrie apparently is not coming back. You know, so it will be all on Durant. Now, they have to have Harden on the floor because it helps Durant. It takes the pressure of handling the ball off of Durant for 48 minutes. But I was expecting Brooklyn to be a slight favorite when that game ended last night. I'm a little bit surprised that Milwaukee is the favorite, but I think they look at even these last two games. Well, they look at the two games that evened up the series in Milwaukee, and then they look at these last two games and say Milwaukee could have won both of them. This series could be over, and maybe should be over, if not for Durant's incredible performance in Game 5. But tomorrow night, in a Game 7, the road team is favored. Are you surprised at that? I thought it would be Brooklyn -1, -2 after what Durant did two nights ago, and thinking that Harden in the third game back might, you know, be getting closer to being James Harden.
I'm kind of not stunned that it opened up Milwaukee favorite at home, but
Milwaukee favorite on the road.
Milwaukee favorite on the road just because of they won game 6. They look healthier, and Harden just isn't Harden right now. And like, we can assume that he'll be healthier in his third game back, but he's more of a decoy right now than anything else.
Yeah, he was a little bit more than a decoy last night. And that's why I was thinking, okay, there you can see he's nowhere near 100%. I'm not even suggesting he's close to it. But he was a little bit more of a factor last night than he was. And you get two more nights of rest. And I'm assuming that the point spread indicates there's no chance that Kyrie's back. I don't think that's been announced, right? Kyrie has not been ruled out of any game yet.
He hasn't been ruled out yet, but I'm not assuming that he's going to play.
Yeah, I'm assuming he's not either. Tonight, you get two game sixes, and you get the two home teams with a chance to close it out. Atlanta, after the miracle comeback the other night in Philadelphia, is a three-point underdog at home tonight against the Sixers. I like the Sixers to force a seventh game. And then the Clippers are an underdog at home with no Kawhi Leonard. Now, that story really has changed since the report from the guy from The Athletic, Shams Charnarnia, or however you pronounce his last name, had reported that it was going to be a torn ACL. We have not seen torn ACL reported by anybody. Kawhi was ruled out of the game tonight. He has not been ruled out for, you know, a game seven potentially on Sunday, or for the next series against Phoenix. If they win tonight, game one against Phoenix begins on Sunday. And by the way, I think that would perhaps rule Chris Paul out. I think the period of time gets him to the earliest comeback possibility of Monday. I think I did the math on that the other night, and I don't know that he's back on Sunday. But the Clippers tonight, after being 8.5-point underdogs in Salt Lake and winning outright, are underdogs tonight at home without Kawhi Leonard against the Jazz. The Jazz trying to force a seventh game there. So you've got some real drama. Last night's game six, a bit of a dud as a game, one of the first ones we've had in a while. I mean, legitimately one of the first dud games. I was ready for another, you know, great game and maybe another Durant, you know, epic performance. And look, 32 points, 11 rebounds, pretty good. There's no doubt about it. But he was not the same player. He looked a little bit winded. He had seven turnovers. Okay, Kevin Durant had seven turnovers in the game last night. James Harden had four. The two of them accounted for 11 turnovers in the game. That's not good. You know, Durant has had some big turnover games before. There's no doubt about it. I've watched him on nights where he has really been sloppy and careless with the ball. Last night, to me, I think it was just a result of back-to-back Warrior games for him. Sunday, you know, essentially having two men on him the entire game once Kyrie left, and then on Wednesday night having to basically strap the team to his back to give them the 3-2 lead. Anyway, let's get to a couple of what he got when we come back. And then Tommy Shepard, if you missed him at the end of the show yesterday, was kind enough to spend 20 minutes with us. You'll hear how that went, and we'll react to that a little bit as well, because now there are many NBA job openings. And to be honest with you, the Wizards aren't near the top of the most attractive, in my view. Kevin Sheehan Show, Team 980, Team980.com. We are also on the Odyssey app.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with three lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
All right, football fans, the NFL Draft is almost here, and the free Odyssey app brings you the latest coverage from the biggest sports radio stations across the country. Which players will help your team the most? Who will make a draft day trade? Will they be ready for week one? The local conversations about the team you love. All streaming free right here on the Odyssey app. A-U-D-A-C-Y. Download it today.
All right.
What do you got?
So the Mets are in town for a four-game set over the weekend starting tonight. There's a game tonight. There's a split doubleheader tomorrow. Then there's a game on Sunday. By the way, the Nats didn't play last night, but they picked up a half game on the Mets because the Mets lost. They lost 2-0 last night against the Cubs, or yesterday afternoon. The game, it was broadcast on SNY, the home for the New York Mets television broadcast. Gary Cohen does play-by-play. Ron Darling and Keith Hernandez are the analysts on the broadcast. Many of you probably have one of those doorbell ring things where you get notified on your phone when somebody's at your door. My wife has it. I refuse to have it attached to my phone. The thing goes off every, 10 minutes, especially during the pandemic when there were packages being delivered seemingly 7 to 8 times a day. Apparently, Keith Hernandez has that as well attached to his phone, and his phone was on during the broadcast. Here's how this played out.
What a beautiful day it was.
Splitter misses 3-1. Wasn't my phone. I know that.
It's not a phone.
All I know is someone put something away.
No, right it's my front door. It's my camera, and it's got a it's a UPS guy delivering something at my front door.
I mean, if you hadn't known that the UPS guy was coming, would that have been okay, or you had to get notification?
It's a new bed for Haji.
Of course it is.
So I had to keep the alarm on to make sure that it arrived.
What was it that he said?
It's a new bed for Haji, his cat. He just had to get alerted that he was getting his new cat bed delivered.
All right. Well, it's there, Keith. It's there. Haji's got her new bed, or he's got his new bed. Right in the middle of a baseball game. That was real professional. You know what? Who cares?
It's not even the first time it's happened. As we
no,
found
it
out.
Happened when you told me about it. I looked it up, and apparently it happened back in April as well. His thing went off again. I don't know what that was for, but it had something to do with his cat the last time too.
Yeah,
Haji is the name of his cat. H-A-D-J-I.
Apparently, he talks about Haji on the broadcast all the time, as I have now found out. Yeah, so back in April, he got locked out of his house because the person that was feeding his cat broke her key in the door and he couldn't get in. So he started panicking on air that he was locked out of his house.
Well, if you're Keith Hernandez and you're a big star from Seinfeld, he had a career, I think, in baseball. Kidding. He, can do pretty much whatever he wants. I actually think... the Barkley attitude, I guess the Keith Hernandez attitude of not letting your life get in the way of your job, even if it's in the middle of the job and it may be unprofessional. I think that takes big you-know-whats, and I think it's also a very endearing trait. Like, I mean, imagine I would never – my phone ringer is off. Not always. Sometimes I accidentally leave it on and it'll ring, and then I turn it off. But I would never look at my phone and say, hold on for a second. We got to take a break because the UPS guy's at my door and he's delivering a new bed for my lovely English bulldog, Lainey. I would almost do anything for her. She's my favorite. No. All right, Keith. Haji's got her new bed, or his new bed. Is Haji a female or a male cat? I have no idea. I'm not a cat person. Are you a cat person?
I'm not. In all that research, I didn't find out if the cat was a male or a female cat.
Yeah. I just will tell you that I think, the ring thing, a wonderful invention. By the way, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think Ring is a Shark Tank pitch. Am I right about that? One of the big products of doorbell Ring cameras, I think, was a Shark Tank funded business. And I think Ring is the one.
So Ring was on Shark Tank, got rejected, and was bought by Amazon for $1 billion.
That's what it was. That's what it was. It got rejected. In fact, I think Mr. Wonderful was the only one that made an offer. Nobody else saw the potential in it. Am I right about that? Are you looking at something that was written about that?
I'm just looking at... So it was called DoorBot at the time instead of Ring. So the name wasn't great. But yeah. It got rejected. I'm trying to read this whole story. No, everybody rejected it and they went to Amazon.
Here it is. I found it. In 2013, Ring was founded as DoorBot, as you mentioned, by Jamie Siminoff. DoorBot was crowdfunded via Christie Street and raised $364,000. After he was trying to raise $250,000. By the way, I don't know if Jamie Siminoff is male or female. Actually, he's male. In 2013, Siminoff and DoorBot appeared on an episode of the reality series Shark Tank to seek a $700,000 investment in the company, which they estimated was worth $7 million. So he was selling $700,000 for 10% of the company. Kevin O'Leary, a.k.a. Mr. Wonderful, made an offer as a potential investor, but Siminoff declined it. After being on Shark Tank, Siminoff rebranded the company as Ring, and then received an additional $5 million, it says, in additional sales. So I guess the company took off. In 2016, I didn't know this, Shaquille O'Neal acquired an equity stake in Ring and subsequently became a spokesperson in the company's marketing. And then the company, hello, and some big names here, raised $200 million in private capital through Kleiner Perkins, Qualcomm Ventures, Goldman Sachs, DFJ Growth, and Sir Richard Branson were all investors. In February 18th, Ring was acquired by Amazon for an estimated value of between $1.2 and $1.8 billion. Hello. I have no idea where its sales are right now. I don't know the answer to that. Okay. When we come back, are we going to take a break and then run Tommy Shepard? All right, we'll take a break. When we come back, you'll hear Tommy Shepard, who appeared on the show at the very end of the show yesterday, spent about 20 minutes with us talking about Scott Brooks and the reasons that Scott Brooks is no longer with the team as the head coach, and about what's next. That's next on the Kevin Sheehan Show.
Kevin Sheehan on the Team 980 and the Odyssey app.
Are you ready?
A lot of NBA openings now. Tommy Shepard is the Wizards general manager. He joined us on the show at the end of the show yesterday, and we appreciated having him on. I wanted to play some of that back for you this morning early in the show. I started off by asking Tommy whether or not the decision to move on from Scott Brooks was his and his exclusively.
Yes. I don't do it to myself. I don't say, guys, this is what I want to do. This is what we're doing. I take a whole lot of input, and I took a long time. We 2 weeks after the season to the day yesterday from when we were eliminated from Philly. It wasn't a decision that was made in a vacuum. It wasn't a decision made overnight. And easily the toughest decision I've faced so far as a GM, that right there with trading John Wall. It just, but what's done is done. We look forward. But I will say, Sky was a fantastic representative of the Wizards, certainly, but he's one of the finest people I've ever met in my life. Yeah. He's been a fantastic player. He was a fantastic coach, unbelievable pillar in the community. You know, when I think of Scotty, I remember when we got to the first year, and we get to the second round against Boston and how great that felt. And then I remember him shaving his head for charity during COVID. You know, he's about all the right things. He's a great person, and I'm really, really grateful to have worked with him.
So why the decision to move on?
You know, I think where we were at, we kind of reached this team has been, you know, the team that Scotty, when we signed him 5 years ago, was a team that was poised with Beal and Wall. We added Markieff. We had Gortat. We had a lot of pieces. That team was really built to win now, and we took it out. And that first year, it looked like that's where it was headed, you know. And in the second year, we get back to the playoffs. We get eliminated in six in Toronto, had some injuries. And then third and fourth year, you have no John Wall. And there was, you know, the only constant was change and lots of turmoil. And then you know, I became the GM 2 seasons ago. So Scotty and I had a great baseline of working together. And last year, we were very clear about our intentions. We wanted to install a culture here of high character and work ethic, and let's get after it. It doesn't come overnight, and those aren't just words on a T-shirt. You have to show it by works. And we moved a lot of players in and out, and Scotty was instrumental in helping establish that. And we got to this season, and, you know, we had high expectations. In terms of internally, we felt, hey, we acquired Russell Westbrook. We have Bradley Beal. We have some young players, but we know the firepower of these guys. We should be able to make the playoffs, right? And when we say playoffs, we meant with the play-ins especially, you should be one of the top 10 teams in the East. And, you know, we just couldn't get out of the gate. We were 2-8. And then we ran into COVID, which was real, and that knocked us down for another month. And I said yesterday, Kevin, you know, it's like several acts in a very bizarre play. This season was all rolled into craziness. We hit our stride for a minute. We ran off, like we were 7-1, and then we got into the All-Star break, and we came back 1-7. And then, you know, you get to the trade deadline, and it looked like pretty much it's going to be a difficult season, and you know, let's start playing young guys and looking at other things. And then we were fortunate. We made a trade. We acquired an impact player, and all of a sudden the schedule became favorable to us. We go 17-6 and make the playoffs basically the last day of the season. We get in. We go up to Boston. That was a tough loss. But then we come back, thump Indiana, and now you're playing the best team in the East. And that crowning achievement, if you will, we did set one of our preseason goals was to make the playoffs. We did that. It's just that the way to get there, I don't think you could ever replicate that again. I wouldn't try it at home. And I would definitely tell you that projecting that forward as being that's really who we are, you know, we'll find out in time. But I think there's areas that we definitely can improve in, and that's where we're going to focus. But that's not taking anything away from that stretch. That stretch was real. It happened. And I'm very grateful for it. But you learn a lot in 5 years. I learned a lot 2 years as a GM about where the NBA is headed and what it needs to be, because we sat there and it's great to make the playoffs, and then you look across and you go, oh my God, we're playing Embiid and Simmons. Look at those guys they have over there. It's the MVP candidate, all defensive player. You know, like, we've got to get better, and we got to get better certainly talent-wise, but we have to really map out how can we do this, how we can take down the top 3-4 teams in the East and be one of those teams. So that's kind of played into that decision for sure, and it's all a projection, but it wasn't a projection made with hope, and it wasn't this whole change that we're making wasn't made overnight, and it was made by me.
Yeah, and you know, just a little bit of sort of fan frustration coming out as you went through that. The final game, Embiid wasn't even on the floor, and it was still a tough night. You know, so you mentioned it wasn't exactly the way it was anticipated that it would evolve, which was not necessarily to Scott's benefit. But you're a basketball lifer. You're a junkie. You know the game so well. Specifically, Tommy, what were the things that the team lacked under Scott that for you had to change, like X's and O's wise?
I don't really want to go there, Kevin, because I think a lot of the stuff that we're doing moving forward is going to require me asking these hard questions of people that interview, and they're going to be listening, and they're going to try to figure out how to cater to what I'm looking for. I want to hear their vision of our team. But I think any team that plays us this past season saw that we didn't shoot the ball very well, that if you could get the ball out of Bradley's hands, double, triple team him, maybe we got too deep in the shot clock. And we took some suboptimal shots early in the shot clock, probably from mid-range, that if you eliminate those things, if you can control your controllables, sooner or later the ball has got to go in. But if it's not an optimal efficiency at both sides of the ball, I think those are the things. And that's not a knock on Scotty or the staff. It's just that's what our team lacked this year. How can you focus on those things? Because, you know, the one thing we definitely don't have is, like, you know, when the Warriors were – carrying the O'Brien trophy around all the time, you know, everybody wanted to be Golden State after that. They're going to run this big wide open offense, but not everybody had Steph or Clay,
right,
or Draymond, right? And we don't have that. But what we do have, we have an all NBA backcourt with Bradley and Russell. We have some young, exciting athleticism amongst our, you know, with Daniel Gafford, Thomas Bryant gets back healthy with Rui. We think Denny's got potential. And then you splash in, you got Bertans. You know, that's kind of your core seven guys today. And, you know, you look forward to plugging in pieces through free agency, through trade. Hopefully we can draft well. And then you kind of get more talent, and more talent gives more competition for minutes. But the areas that I think we got to focus on, we would say that if Scotty was here, if he wasn't here, is how do you get better? How do you optimize your offense, your defense? Because, you know, Scotty was, he's fourth in the league in ATOs. Those are the areas you can really grab points, and we were great there. And our pace was good. But when your efficiency struggles, you know, it's almost like you just ran a marathon and you go grab a case of beer and a box of chocolate. It cannibalizes itself. So what can we do better?
Yeah, I in listening to you answer that, you know, you did answer it a little bit, and I think it's just so spot on for anybody that's just watching. You know, with pace, it was fun, and it's at times looked easy. When the game slowed down and there was the ability to sort of double Bradley and really hedge, there wasn't always an answer. And you didn't even mention defense, but I would imagine among the hard questions that you're going to ask the people that you interview is, you know, something that leads to better production defensively, right?
Yeah, and I think that's to go from 29th to 19th, that's one possession a game. You have to be better. And so go from 19th to 10th, it's about 1.5 possessions per game. But if it was so easy, why can't everybody do it? You know, I think one thing that definitely was an obstacle, but it's for every single team in the NBA, was the lack of practice is really, it's right. So critical when you have young players, especially. We can talk about tonight's game plan and you understand we're going to do, you know, a triple switch here. We're going to do these base defenses, how we're going to run the pick and roll. But when you have to go out and actually execute it, you know, game plans get burnt up pretty quick. If you don't have those repetitions in practice and you're not able to go at full speed in practice, it's harder to replicate NBA players till you're out there on the floor trying to figure them out and guard them. And oh, by the way, you know, like you said, when we're measuring ourselves where we got to go, we don't have the ability to guard a Giannis or Kawhi or the big Embiid straight up. So you got to figure out different ways. And that's something we're going to continue to address talent-wise. But certainly I think execution-wise, that's going to be the big responsibility for the next head coach.
And I also think, Tommy, and correct me if I'm wrong, but, you know, less ISO, more making a defense work and move helps you defensively on the other end.
No, without a question. It's proven the more passes you can do offensively, you know, the better your efficiency there is, and certainly it puts a lot more pressure on the defense. You bail a defense out if it's one pass shot. So if you could really get that ball moving and force the other team to get into second side, third side, they're making you move around and stuff, that's only going to take a drag of their energy at the other end,
exactly.
And that's a given. So I agree with you. You're not wrong, so there you have it.
So we're talking to Tommy Shepard, the Wizards GM. The reporting on this yesterday from a very reliable Adrian Wojnarowski from ESPN was that the two sides failed to come to an agreement. Was there a deal, Tommy, that if Scott had taken, he'd still be the head coach?
No. No, it never got that far. It just comes up. And, you know, we discussed everything for a long time. 2 weeks is a long time. And we went through exit interviews. We went through processes, and you answer these things, Kevin, with an open mind. And I had 4 or 5 different options. If Scotty stays, is there a hybrid staff? Is there different things that we can do? And talking through it, and you realize what's possible, what's not possible, and you have to make a decision. So I would never say, hey, we weren't. It was like the day after the season I knew Scotty was gone, or the day after the season I really wanted to keep him, and we're going to make these concessions or any of that. None of that. That's why you go through a very thorough process.
Okay.
And you include a lot of people. So I think the decision was made, it was certainly myself, but I consulted with a lot of people. And I think at the end of the day, hey, we will find out, right? Everybody feels great the first day of a decision, and then there's the next 364 after that.
So
it was the best decision for us.
Just to confirm, you know, this wasn't a situation where there was an offer on the table and it wasn't an offer that you guys could agree on either way. This was not, there was never an offer that you guys could agree on either way. This was not, there was never an offer made to Scott to stay. Just to confirm.
No, there's conversation. There's always conversation, but there was no offer made.
Okay. You know, there was this thought all along, and maybe it was just a fan thought, that Russell Westbrook's relationship with Scott Brooks, that his input would be a factor in the organization's decision on Scott, was it?
Certainly. I respect Russell. I hear his words, and he's a professional. You know, if it comes down to, I mean, our fans accusing Russell wouldn't play hard if Scottie wasn't the coach. I mean, the guy was the MVP under a different coach in Oklahoma City. Yeah. He was all NBA and a different coach in Houston. So I don't know where that goes. I understand players have preferences and they're always going to speak their mind. But at the end of the day, you're talking about a Hall of Fame player that has a track record of every single night he straps it on and brings the gas. So I don't know where that would come from. Like, what does that mean? If this is Russell's guy, right, and he says, I'm not going to play without him, he would never do that. You know, the professionalism that he's brought to this organization is unparalleled. He's brought Bradley Beal. You know, this was the best season of Bradley's career and so many marks. And it's no coincidence that Russell was part of that. And I think those two together, building forward, I think, you know, there's a lot of – put it this way, my voicemail is full. I've got more than 300 texts I got to return from people that are very interested in this situation here because of those guys.
But you did. You went to both Westbrook and Beal and sought their opinion on the coaching decision.
Yeah, absolutely. Not just, it's not like, hey, what do you guys think? Should I do this or this? No, but what do we need to get better? And their thoughts do matter because they have to go through it every day. But they, you know, it's like I say, everybody has. I want people to have a say, but not everybody's going to have a vote. But to not ask their opinion, think about that. To not ask their input, they're stakeholders in this. You know, there are two franchise cornerstone guys. We built this team around Bradley. The first huge acquisition we had was to bring Russell in. And we saw some results there, and we expect better in the future. So I just am a big collaborator, Kevin. I'd like to know what people think and where they think we can get better. And the only way you're going to do that is to ask the hard questions and be prepared for the feedback.
You know, it's not a cursory.
I think it's time to move on. You know, I think they both certainly they were very, I think they have a great deal of gratitude for Scottie. But I think they've been in the NBA. You know, Bradley played for Randy Whitman before this. Russell's played for other coaches. It's a business. They understand, and we move on. We've had different teammates. It's a difficult part of that to separate the personal from the professional, but we've all done it. We all continue to have to do it. The only constant is change.
We are talking to Tommy Shepard, the Wizards general manager. You know, when you got the GM job, and I think a lot of us who are really big fans of the team, you know, we're happy for you. And, you know, one of the conversations I had a couple of times with various people is, you know, Tommy's going to want to hire his own coach at some point. He's not only had this opportunity to mold the roster, and we've watched as character and things that may not have been as important in the past are very important to you. And so you've started to mold this roster in your vision. But was getting a chance to pick your own head coach always part of this once you got the job?
No, because if it's what's working, don't, you know what they say, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. Like, certainly I would, if I thought what we were doing would be replicable to success down the road, you don't get interfere with that. I had to make the decision based on a lot of key markers that we have to evaluate. And we run through data, certainly, but we also run through a lot of film and we run through a lot of interviews. And that's kind of where it was. That's not what drives me. Is it has to be my person, not at all. But what you do is you got to figure out, okay, what's the best for the future? You know, and I've been through this, you know, with the Wizards. I've been there for a long time. From when I got here, Eddie Jordan had already been hired. Ernie came after Eddie, actually. And I saw that dynamic. And then I saw when you rush into a hire, we knew Flip Saunders was going to be top of our list. And then when we moved Flip on, Randy was the interim, and then all of a sudden Randy showed, hey, he can do this job, and he took off and took it and ran with it. The following seasons, we were successful, and that kind of had its run. So then Scottie was at the top of our list for a team that doesn't even appear anymore. Bradley Beal is the only person left from that era.
Right.
So times change,
and
I'm trying to adapt with that.
What are you looking for in this next head coach?
you know, it's going to be somebody that's real familiar, I believe, with the NBA game. It doesn't mean they have to be in the NBA or had to play in the NBA, but somebody that's really familiar right now with the game is the game. It always has been. But the modern NBA, the ability to really maximize every possession and control your controllables, and I'm not going to say don't do anything dumb, because stuff happens every single night that you can't control. But can you put yourself in the best positions to win every night? Can you look back and say, you know what, we ran the right plays. We're in position to get the right stop, and sometimes that damn ball just doesn't go in, or sometimes it goes in against you, right? But can you just play every single night an intelligent brand where you're removing a lot of things that would put you in bad position? I think that's where you really, you know, along the margins in the NBA is where you're going to get the most gains, actually. Because until you have the top MVP player on your team every year, and you know that team's a legit title contender, you have to figure out ways to grab all the inches you can to get yourself in that position. And I look at the teams that are still standing. You know, I use Phoenix as an example. They were outside the NBA for quite some time, and then you acquire a player like Chris Paul, and now they're in the conference finals equation. Well, Russell Westbrook is here now, and I think Bradley is a supreme player. He's all NBA this year, but he could use that kind of help from Russell, like Chris Paul gave to Book, you know. So those kinds of parallels are there. We're not comparing the talent. I'm just saying there's an example where one player can be a huge change agent, and then you can add more pieces. But, you know, sometimes really good players can make average players pretty good. I'm not great with adjectives, but you can level up your performance if you're playing with superior players, and we see that. You know, I look at Rui, and I'm glad, Kevin, we went through this experience of going through the playoffs. It hurt getting her butt kicked a little bit, but I look and I saw Rui shoot 60% from the floor, 61 from three. He averaged above his season averages. I think he was at 14-7-7. So that was a great experience no matter what. Even if you're getting cooked by Simmons in the post, even if you got run over by Embiid, those are scars. So next time we go to play the playoffs, it's not his first time. That's a big
thing. I wish
he
had shot more.
No matter what.
I thought he passed on way too many looks. But you're right. The experience, obviously. It's always interesting that conversation that sports fans have. We shouldn't be in the playoffs because we can't go anywhere. We should get a lottery pick versus the experience, especially when you have young players, of actually playing in games that matter. And you know this more than anybody. The postseason in your sport's completely different than the regular season.
Oh, this year in particular, you know, the MVP is going to be who has the best medical staff. I mean, if you're in the playoffs, you have a legitimate chance every night. You never know what's going to happen. The game that we won, you know, Big Joel got hurt in, left the court, and that was a difference maker, let's be honest. But then the next game he didn't play, and we lost. So then you look over last night, hey, what's the logic? You got the Clippers. They don't have Kawhi. Certainly Utah's going to just pound them, and look what happens. You know, and then the other series, someone's up 26 going in. You know, it's a cruel game, but you just never know. But you will never know if you're not in the game. If you don't get to the playoffs, you're not giving yourself that chance. And you're giving Bradley another year without the playoffs. You're giving Russell another year. You know, that's – I owe to those players to give them the best chance to get to the playoffs, because that's where your careers are made, really. The regular season, there's regular season players and there's guys who do it in the playoffs, and they're not the same people.
Per usual, I feel like I could go on for another half hour with you, but I have 30 seconds, and there are two more questions I want to get in. Number one, you said something about what you'd be looking for, and I think if I heard you correctly, you know, it didn't necessarily mean that they've got direct NBA experience. Is a college coach a possibility?
Yeah, a college coach, an international coach, people who haven't coached at all. You know, you look at who's still standing in the finals. There's a guy who never had any coaching experience, and his team's doing pretty darn well. There's a guy who's a lifer who never played in the NBA. There's a guy who played in the NBA, was a broadcaster before he was a coach. So you can come from anywhere, you know, and I think the diversity is a given. We are going to be very in this search, very thorough. We're going to be very inclusive. We're not going to, you know, and I say the best person for a reason. You know, we're going to interview a lot of people, and we want to see what people think of this team and how they can make us better. And give them every chance to impress us, and then we'll make our decision.
You already said that, you know, you, in this day and age, and you are a collaborator, that you went to your two-star players about the current situation. Will you seek their input on the next hire, Beal and Westbrook?
Certainly. No, actually, like I said before, they're stakeholders. And, you know, you want to make sure it's not an arranged marriage. We want everybody to know each other and see what they're about. And I think there's a part of this interview process that has to happen before we get to that. Maybe you get down to the last few finalists. But I think that's I would think any head coach candidate would want to talk to those guys before taking the job as well.
And that would
it's our responsibility.
That would just lead me to believe that, you know, you don't see there's any future over the next several years without Bradley in it.
Well, I sure hope not. That would be a tough one, but you know, we deal with where we're at. I know since day one, Bradley and I, you know, when he walked in as a 19-year-old, and his whole wardrobe would fit in one suitcase, and now it fits in several houses. Like, I've watched Bradley grow up. I've seen him become a father. I've seen all the things about him, and you know, I really believe firmly that he's a player you build around. And
wardrobe
him before. We extended him before Kevin when no one thought we could. All I can do is it's all judged by works. So I show him the body of work that we've done in 2 years, and I think it lines up with what I told him would happen, and we continue to do that. But you have to earn equity every single day by what you do, not by what you say.
I love it. Wardrobe growth to reflect increased affluence. Perfectly said. I really appreciate the time. As always, good luck with this process. We'll talk soon.
Thanks, my brother. Take care.
All right. Tommy Shepard, that was from yesterday. Really appreciated the time. I actually really like Tommy. Tommy really knows the game. He's been very good in identifying talent. The Gafford trade was a steal. By the way, the Gafford trade really was instrumental in sort of that 17-6 run. And it's just a weird situation that franchise is in. And now there is significant competition for head coaches because there are seven now, count them, openings because Rick Carlisle is leaving Dallas. And by the way, I think we'll end up in an obvious spot. More on where the Wizards position or opening ranks among the seven teams right now looking for head coaches when we come back. And then we're going to get to Ron Rivera's comments on Ben Standig's podcast from 2 days ago, where he completely dismissed Kyle Allen as a possibility for almost anything when it comes to the Washington football team. It's the Kevin Sheehan Show. We are on the Team 980, theteam980.com. And don't forget, you can carry us anywhere you go if you download the Audacy, AUDACY app.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
What up, y'all? It's your boy Danny Green, 3-time NBA champ. You either rooted for me or rooted against me. Join myself and my co-host Harrison Sanford on the Inside the Green Room podcast.
It's a podcast that brings you never-before-told tales from the locker room to candid interviews with basketball legends to breakdowns of what's happening in the NBA right now. Whether you're a diehard fan or casual about your hoops, this podcast brings you the game like never before.
Follow Inside the Green Room on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.